In the nation of Israel, they've just gone through, in fact, the history of the nation of Israel in many ways is similar to the United States. They went through a time for several years, many years, of one war, one great war after another. And in fact, if you read 1st and 2nd Chronicles, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Samuel, you'll find one great battle listed after another. In fact, God told David that when David went to him and said, God, I want to build your temple. If you remember in the Old Testament, God said to David, David, I'm not going to let you build my temple. I'm going to let it be your son because you have been a man of the sword. You have been a man of blood. And I want Solomon to build it. He'll be a man of peace. And he's giving. And it wasn't that the war was wrong that David was involved in. That was just the point in their history. And then came the days of Solomon. And then after that, you'll find little skirmishes through their history at that point. But you find no major all-out wars as you found in those historical parts of the Old Testament. So it really has become kind of a lull as far as peace is concerned, which I have to say to you. As much as that is great in the human sense, that is a very dangerous time for a nation in a spiritual sense. That's also true of our nation today. You often find as you look back, it's during times of duress, it's during times of great tribulation this nation has gone through, that has caused them to be pushed back to God. Well, now we've gone through a great period. In fact, I am the second generation of those who have not endured great war as far as our nation is concerned. And I think as a result of that you see a lot of the tendencies today in our nation, even in our churches, that you saw in the nation of Israel. And then in chapter 6, starting with verse 1, Amos is just a simple sheep herder. He's just a common laborer. He's a farmer. He works, and today he would work with cattle. He's that kind of man. He's just a good, average, everyday man that God has placed a call upon his life, and he's being faithful to that call. So when it comes to his words, much like James in the New Testament, he doesn't beat around the bush. He's not playing political word games here. He goes right at the heart of the matter. And that's what he does, beginning in Amos chapter 6 and verse 1. He says this, woe. In other words, he's pronouncing a warning. He says, woe to them that are at ease in Zion, and trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations to whom the house of Israel came. Pass ye unto Calneh, and see, and from thence to Hamath the great. Then go down to Gath of the Philistines. Be they better than these kingdoms? Or their border greater than your border? Ye that put afar away the evil day and cause the seed of violence to come near, that lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat the lambs out of the flock and the calves out of the midst of the stall, that chant to the sound of the viol and invent to themselves instruments of music like David, that drink wine in their bowls and anoint themselves with the chief ointments, but they are not grieved for the affliction of Joseph. It's only going to be about 40 years now as Amos is crying out saying, thus saith the Lord, over and over. He's given the warning that if this nation does not turn back to God, Jehovah God, that this nation will fall. God will bring judgment on them. It is within 40 years, 39 and a half years, that this nation after Amos is brought into Assyrian captivity. Horrendous captivity. 40 years. I can almost imagine that those that were listening to him, much like those of us as Americans that are listening today, yeah, right. We've heard this our whole life. You got to be kidding me. Yeah, God's going to do something bad if we don't turn to him. How often have I heard that in the late night comics make fun of it? Oh, yeah, we have to be careful. My friend, let me be very clear with you. Can I be real clear with you? God is not intimidated by human beings laughing at him. God doesn't get worked up at those that make fun of him. Do you realize that? God laughs them into derision. He's not an insecure God. He's a jealous God, but he's not an insecure God. He's not a defensive God. When God decides that it will be, it will be. And there's really not much you or I can do about that. What happens to you and I, however, is that what we often come to the place, and I'll use this word, we just get complacent. We've been lulled literally to spiritual sleep. You know what happens with us? It's a slow process. But it's a sure process. We didn't mean for it to happen. We can't really go back and trace even exactly how it happened. But it happened. And all of a sudden, when we once were on fire for God, God was using us in a great way. When people looked at our lives, they saw that only God could be accomplishing in that person's life what is being accomplished. And we knew, even more importantly, in our private moments, that God was doing a great work in our own heart. Where'd it go? I think it's important for Christians now that, as the title of the message says, we need to get our fight back. I watch many that we just become comfortable in our Christian life. Sometimes we wake up in the morning and we look in the mirror. Have you ever been impressed with yourself in the mirror? You ever been there? Yeah. Well, I'm going to shoot straight with you. This morning, I looked in the mirror after I got all dressed, and I was pretty impressed. And I thought, no, you mean you're all right? Sometimes we do that, don't we? You want to know how complacency sets in? Let me tell you how it sets in. We look in the spiritual mirror of our lives, and this is how you know complacency is starting to set in. I look pretty good spiritually. You know, God kind of got He kind of got a deal with me. You know, when I woke up this morning, I mean, I know His mercies are new every morning, but He really didn't have to put out a lot of mercy for me because I didn't really need that much. See, we would never say that to someone around us. But inside our heart, which, by the way, that is where it matters, we have had a spiritual pride that has bred complacency. We're a good old boy. And we have become satisfied with that. Every single morning that I wake up, listen to me, and that you wake up as well, I want to encourage you to do something, would you? When you stand in front of that mirror, and I'm not talking about in a physical sense, I'm speaking in a spiritual sense, instead of putting up those around you that it's very easy for you to compare yourself with, that you look better than they do in a spiritual sense, can I encourage you to do something that the Scripture says you and I ought to do? Number one, it says we ought not to compare ourselves among ourselves. It's not wise. But secondly, may we compare ourselves to the one who will always show us where we lack. Compare yourselves to the person of Jesus Christ. Now, my friend, if you ever get to the place in your life where you can look in the spiritual mirror and see Jesus Christ, and looking back at you is a perfect image of Him in your life, then you could start bragging on God who produced it in you. But until that point, we have to come to the place that we look in that spiritual mirror and we say, Lord, today, these are the areas I need You to work on me in. These are the areas that I'm struggling in. Lord, these are the areas that You know that I'm weak and I'm coming back to You and I'm asking again. But some of us, complacency has set in to where we're simply in a holding pattern and no one's going to shake us from that. As I was praying, getting ready for the message this morning, I said, Lord, how can You convict a complacent heart? The very fact that it's complacent is the very area that causes a person to say, it really doesn't bother me. I don't care that I'm spiritually lukewarm. I don't care that I'm just so-so. I'm satisfied. And then the Lord, as I was praying, almost verbally said back to me, Shane, it's not you that's going to do it anyway. It's going to be My Holy Spirit working through the Word of God. So today I will tell you, I can't persuade you through cunning speech. I can't get through to you as you cross your arms and you say, all I'm doing today, Pastor, is enduring and just getting through another boring church service. Because there's nothing really that's going to change about me. I will pray the Holy Spirit gets a hold of you. In the book of Amos, he says, first, the rebuke of spiritual complacency? How are we going to get our fight back? Where's our passion going to come back from? You notice first the rebuke. He says, "Woe to them that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria." He talks about the condition. It's described, the condition of complacency. Look down at verse 4, if you would. Here's the call signs of it. He says their customs, their dress, their perfumes, they were of the richest. Look down at verse 4. "That lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat the lambs out of the flock and the calves out of the midst of the stall." They enjoy the richest foods, the greatest delicacies they enjoy. You know, this past week I was reading in World Magazine. Perhaps you even saw it in the paper. They were talking about the obesity rate in the United States of America. It's a very funny thing that they said. Very interesting. One of the scientists came on that wrote the article. One of the scientists they were quoting, this is what he said. He goes, "The United States of America has a very unique problem." And he said that one of the unique characteristics of those who live in poverty as compared to those who don't in the United States of America. You know what one of those characteristics are? Now listen, a characteristic of those in our population that live below poverty level. Do you know what one of the main characteristics, not one of them, but one of the characteristics are in the United States of America? It's not true anywhere else in the world. Do you know what it is? Obesity. Now think about that for just, isn't that ironic? That one of the characteristics of living below poverty level in this nation is that we eat too much food. I guarantee you they're not saying that in China. Do you not see how blessed we are? That one of the greatest problems that poor people in this nation have is that they have too much to eat. Isn't that strange? He goes on further and says this. In verse 5, notice another consideration, condition of complacency. "That chant to the sound of the viol." In other words, they sing to the music. "And invent to themselves instruments of music like David. The pursuit of pleasure becomes their chief aim. Entertainment becomes their chief goal in life." Is that not a great description of the church today? Of our nation as a whole, but as a church today too. You notice when complacency is set up, this is how we do it. We listen and we find ourselves entertained. When we get bored with that, we've got to find something to invent that's another level of entertainment just to keep ourselves centralized and tantalized. We've got to go a little further with it. And we've got to invent another way. We are consumed as a culture, and I'm speaking of the church. We are consumed as a culture with entertainment. Pleasure becomes our highest ideal. You don't think that's happening in our society? I want you to think about it for just a second. You look at past military leaders, past presidents. When they die in this country, we may give them a few hours of media time. You know, we'll make somewhat of a big deal of them on the news programs. But you find a sociopath entertainer, and he gets weeks of coverage. Now think about that for just a moment. What does that tell you about our society? We're driven by the pursuit of pleasure. And all we have done is place the pursuit of pleasure and comfort where our passion for souls used to be. Because why? Because if you look at the way that we spend our time's not really spent in that productive a way. There's a lot of pursuit of pleasure. There's a lot of downtime. It's time for us to get our fight back. The condition of complacency, the causes of it, Israel was in an unprecedented era of prosperity. They had huge prosperity going on now. Whenever a person's prosperous, there's a couple of ways they react to that. The first way you find Israel doing is become very prideful. They become very boastful. They act. Now listen, I love the fact that God has placed me in the United States. I am thrilled to be in the United States of America. But it's only by the grace of God. And it's not something that we as a people should take pride in, near as much as it's something that should humble us, that God has done this for us. Now how can we use what He's done for us to further the message of His Son, Jesus Christ? They became complacent because of their prosperity. God blessed them so much when it should have humbled them. When it's life is all about you, you never have the opportunity to step back and analyze that right now in your life, listen to me, right now in your life, you are living out your memories. In your life, as you look back, the times that you're living right now, as you look back, you're going to realize at that point in the future that those were some wonderful times. But you could never enjoy it in the moment. Complacency. You can't see life for what it is. They were enjoying unprecedented era of prosperity. They trusted, look at verse 1, they trusted in their military resources for security. He says in verse 1, woe to them that are using Zion, watch, and trust in the mountain of Samaria. The city of Samaria was a fortress, is literally what it was. It was built up on a tell, and that's just a little mound. That's how they built it. It was a mighty fortress. And that's what they were trusting in. Isn't that amazing how you and I are trusting? As Americans, we trust in our military might. Hey, I think it's wonderful, but I got to tell you something. If and when the Lord decides, we're in trouble. You can build all the planes and all the tanks and all the missiles that you want. But the Lord can laugh that into derision. My friend, our dependence is upon God. Now, if the church doesn't understand that, who will realize that? They were complacent because they trusted in their prosperity, their military resources. In verse 3, you'll notice, they dismissed all serious thought. Yea, they put far away the evil day and caused the seed of violence to come near. You know what? They didn't want anybody that got serious on them, they wanted to push away. They didn't want to hear from this prophet Amos. They didn't want to hear about coming. They didn't want to hear about serious things. Have you ever noticed in our day, you say, listen, do you know for certain if you died right now? They don't cut you off at the point, are you going to go to heaven or hell? They cut you off today at the point, do you know if you die today, that's where it's cut off. Do you know why? Because we don't want to think negative thoughts. We don't want to think about death. Listen, I don't want to think about death. I don't want to concern myself with all that negativity. I'm going to go to a church where they just talk about how good it can be for me. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear really the truth. I want to hear those that are going to tell me what I would like truth to be. Their pursuit of prosperity in verse 4 was primary importance. And in verse 6, they weren't grieved because of the sickness of their nation. As the church, and listen, I'm talking to the church today. You and I need to be serious about the spiritual condition of our nation. There are things happening in our day and time. And I watch Christians' eyes. And you know what they say? Man, I don't care. What do I care? As long as I have a nice house and nice car and food on the table, and why do I care? I'll tell you why. Because it won't be before long that your children won't have the privileges that you have. I'm not speaking of capitalism. I'm speaking of living in a nation where they can worship God freely. I'm speaking in a nation where God is honored and valued, and where trust in Him is spoken in public arenas. That's going to be gone. Why? Because we really didn't care. He gives a rebuke of spiritual complacency. The result of spiritual complacency in Amos' day, it led to the death of his nation within 40 years. Within 40 years, it was wiped out. They were taken off into exile. They were destroyed until 1947. Millennia later, the nation of Israel was no more as it was. It was gone. And it still is not the same as it was in those days. It caused the people to reject their divine mission. The nation of Israel was set up to be a light to the rest of the world. You read Paul in the New Testament. That's the reason that God called the nation of Israel. They were to shine God's grace to the whole world. And they rejected their divine mission. It denied to them their very destiny. What happens in our day? I'll tell you what happens with complacency. Complacency robs God of the most energetic, the most committed servants. I watch people in our church. I was saying this in the early service. Did you know this past week at Somerville Baptist Church, do you know how much at Somerville Baptist Church got left undone in ministry? It would probably amaze you at how much more could have been done in ministry this past week at Somerville Baptist. Well, what are you saying that for, Pastor? You kind of writing, what are you trying to write your own review? No, I'm not. There's only so much I can do. The things that got left undone are because there are believers at Somerville Baptist Church, members, that say, you know what, Pastor, I'm going to cheer you on. And I might even throw a little in the offering plate if you're a good boy. But the fact is, that's your church, not my church. That's the church I attend. That's not the church I belong to. That's the church that I go to when I feel guilty enough to go. That's not a church that I serve in. See, I don't serve in ministry. I am my own ministry. As far as the way I spend my time, do you know how many people are left unministered to through the week through Somerville Baptist Church? Because we have those that say, they don't really need me. I'm not really that concerned about it. Complacency robs God of His most consecrated, most dedicated servants. Does God need you? No. But the joy of it is that through His grace, He will use you if you're but willing. People to be visited. People to be talked to about Jesus Christ. People to be discipled. Grass to be met. Walls to be painted. None of that happens on its own. It's God's people coming together to say, we want to do a mighty work for the cause of Christ in Eastern Morgan County. Complacency robs us of our joy here and our awards in the hereafter. Complacency prevents some. I want you to listen to what I'm about to say. Complacency in a Christian prevents some from going to heaven when this life is over. What did you just say? Did you say somebody could lose their salvation? No, that's not what I said. I said that complacency in Christians will prevent some from going to heaven that should have been there. How do I know that? You ought to read the book of Ezekiel when it talks about the watchman on the wall. There's some at your workplace that should have heard about Jesus Christ from your mouth. There's some that live beside you that should have seen Jesus Christ from your life. There's some that you go to school with that should have known about Him from you. And they never did. I often wonder how many of those that will spend eternity in hell. And by the way, friend, am I speaking of hell? I'm not speaking in a condescending, prideful manner. If it were not for the grace of God, I would be destined there as well. But I wonder those that didn't have to be there, but Christians became complacent. The preacher will handle that. The deacons will handle that. Some other church will handle that. Sharing the gospel with others, that's for somebody else. I wonder. Thirdly, and I'm finished. Well, Pastor, that's me. I am complacent. The fact is, I don't have any fight left in me. I don't want to fight the good fight of faith. In fact, quite honestly, even what you're saying right now, it's kind of like water off a duck's back. That may be true right now, but when the time comes that you finally see life for what it is, I want you to listen to the remedies of complacency. How can I remedy this in my own life, Pastor? Through God's grace, there's four realizations you need to come to. Number one is this. You need to attempt to comprehend the brevity of this life. If some of us spent on the most important things, the time that we spend on those things that are so small, how much more for the cause of Christ could we get done? What will get you up in the morning is understanding, I don't have a whole lot of these left. That is such a, man, what a negative thought. No, it's not a negative thought. In the fact that, quite honestly, underneath God's grace, you could have none left. When God pokes you tomorrow morning, when He wakes you up, He stirs you. And you take in that first breath of wakeful air and realize that you've come out of your night of sleep. My friend, it ought to drive you to understand that your calling for that day, by the grace of God, is to serve Him with it. There's not that many more left. Attempt to understand the brevity of life. Secondly, how do I remedy this complacency? Contemplate, consider the value of salvation in another individual. Look at someone else's life and consider what salvation can do for them. What do you mean? Well, I want you to consider what it's done for you. Salvation redeemed your soul. It gave you purpose in this life, and it gave you a destiny for the life that is to come. It saved you from a Christless hell where the fire is not quenched and the worm never dies. And it gave you a home in heaven. Consider what it's done for you. Now consider what that salvation can do in the life of another. Consider living your life to see others come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. That'll remedy your complacency. Thirdly, meditate the issues, the certainty, the reality of eternity. As much as you need to consider how short this life is, to get over complacency, also consider how long eternity is. When you consider how short this life is, how long eternity is, then what's done in this life for anything other than eternity really doesn't matter that much. You know, if I take my 357 or 351 Cleveland board out, make that thing go just 5 or 6 miles an hour faster, has that done that much more for the cause of Christ than if I take that night when I was working on that engine and spend it going to highways and hedges at my local church? I'm not saying those things are wrong, and I'm not saying a man ought not to have hobbies, and I'm not saying that there ought to be times of just pure relaxation and pleasure. I'm not saying that. I'm just asking you to consider the reality of eternity. That what's done, that moment that we breathe our last breath on this earth, so much of what we've done on this earth for ourselves and because of ourselves will mean nothing. I can remember as a young man, that's what drove me. When the Lord placed His call on ministry, I did everything to get out of it. But the thought process of, what if I get to the end of this life and I've gotten all the power and I've gotten all the fame, I've gotten all the money, and I've gotten everything that this flesh says is a success? Well, then what? But if in this life I live my life to see souls saved, I live this life to see God glorified, I live this life to see people affected, not for just this life, but for all eternity, if I give my life to that end, then everything that I do on this earth becomes eternal in its value. That means when you're standing over my grave marker, all that I've done is not there in the grave with me. It's gone well past my life. Consider the reality of eternity. Fourth and lastly, a remedy for complacency is listen to the command of your master. If it has to come down to this, if you don't do it because you love Him, if you don't do it because you're passionate about it, then at the very least, will you do it because you fear Him and you have a sense of duty? If it has to come down to that, then may it come down to that lowest level of reaction that He commands to go ye therefore and teach all nations. To have the same spirit that He had when He looked on the multitudes, that He had compassion on them. And may I have my attitude toward them as Christ did. Complacency. A.J. Gordon was a pastor in Boston, Massachusetts, years and years ago, early part of last century. He moved over here from England. He was kind of a maverick. He didn't do things normal. He never knew quite what A.J. Gordon was going to do in a church service. And he took a church that was very well known, it was a very high church. And he even came to the place where he would get up in the pulpit and he would preach. And the day when every preacher did this, he would preach without a robe. Unheard of in those days. It came so much to the point that he was rocking the boat that they had a meeting, a special external meeting, to decide whether or not they were going to hold on to A.J. Gordon as the pastor. Well, that Sunday after that was really a prelude to revival at that church. A.J. Gordon got up and he preached a sermon entitled The Funeral of the Church. And this is what he said, and I quote. He said, "Ecclesiastical corpses lie all around us. The caskets in which they repose are lined with satin and are decorated with solid silver handles and abundant flowers. Like all caskets, they're just large enough for their occupants, no room for converts. These churches have died from the disease of formalism, have been embalmed in complacency. If by the grace of God this church has any life left in her, I warn you that those that bury thy sister churches will be at thy door to carry thee out, because I predict this church will be dead soon, because I hear the death rattle in the lungs." After he preached the sermon, at the end of the sermon, think about how he closed this. He had six men at the back of that auditorium, and they, three on each side, they carried a casket into the auditorium and walked down at the end of the sermon and placed the casket at the front of the auditorium. And A.J. Gordon invited all the people at the conclusion of the service to walk by that casket that they opened up. And he said, "As you walk by, I want you to look inside the casket. And I want you to see the dead church." So the people got up at the conclusion of the service. They all began to file by up into the front of the auditorium. And as they leaned over and they looked to see their dead church inside that casket, you know what they saw? Themselves. Because in that casket, he placed a 6-foot mirror so every person that looked over inside to see their dead church recognized that the problem was not the church as a whole. The problem was the complacency of its individual members. And together, it was killing their church.